Right, so the learning tonight will be for the Rav Moshe Shlomo of Menachem Yitzchak ben Bela Brina and Tovia Zev ben Chaya Rivka. I want to revisit a few things from last week that I wanted to say last week and didn't get a chance to, and then we'll move on to this week's topic. One thing last week I wanted to discuss, I mentioned that there's a lot of different ideas about the segulos, the different rewards we get for a Ner Shabbos. And we spoke about the idea of having children who are Talmid Chachamim being a big schus in Ner Shabbos. But a few other things mentioned over here about Ner Shabbos is that, number one, somebody who is having difficulty having children, so there's a segula that they say the parsha of Chana in front of the Shabbos candles. I think I did mention that last week. And that means she should say it and understand the entire parsha, what it means. And really, it's the entire Haftorah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah, and that's considered a segula for having children. It says afterwards that one of the great segulos of Ner Shabbos is that it gives a long life, it creates shalom, peace, simcha, shalva, tranquility, it can bring parnasa upon a person, and take away the fire of the Yetzer Hara from giving us too many challenges we can't handle. And brings us close to the writing of the Neret Zion Yerushalayim, brings us close to Geula. So there's actually a language brought down from the Zohar. And the Zohar says a woman lighting Shabbos candles should have a lot of simcha at the time, a lot of ratzon, desire to get close to Hashem, to light the Ner Shabbos. And at that point, there's a tremendous kavod which comes upon her and upon the candles. And she's zolche very much and to many, many zechuyos through lighting the Shabbos candles, to children who are kadoshim, to Torah, niras Hashem, and she will achieve shalom in the land. So a very, very interesting and beautiful lesson of the Zohar. There's a story here brought down from the Maggid of Kuznets, who said that the mother of the Rav Shmuel, Kadnaiver, who was one of the big Rebbe, known as the Tiferet Shmuel. So he says that his mother, she couldn't even speak Hebrew, couldn't read Hebrew, she was illiterate, she only knew Russian. But when she would sit down in front of the Shabbos candles, when she'd light, she would say in Russian, "Yihratzon shiye bani Shmuel Talmid Chacham." She had a very simple tefillah, "May my son Shmuel be a Talmid Chacham." And she was zocheh to have a child who became a great gadol, someone who wrote Sfarim that we still learn to this very day, from that very simple, heartfelt tefillah in front of the Shabbos candles. So this just shows us a little bit of the meaning and the beauty of Shabbos candles. It says further here, while the neros are lit, the satan doesn't come to prosecute, doesn't make any accusations. And that's why it's such a great time for tefillah, because when the satan is not there making any negative accusations, he's not coming to accuse you of anything wrong, he's not coming to block the tefillos. It's a time that tefillos are very, very heard, very, very accepted by Hashem. And it says that, many Sfarim bring down the power of tefillah at that time. So we mentioned last week in short the power of tefillah, but I just wanted to read some other more specific ideas of tefillah of the tefillahs and by Lucas Neros. So we have that in mind every single Friday night. It can add to the power of our tefillahs. Going back to last week, we discussed the different minhagim of Lel Shabbos. We discussed Shalom Aleichem, Eish Yischayel. So I want to mention Lechadodi as well. I'm not going to go through davening right now. There's things in davening which I'm going to skip. But Lechadodi, I think, something we all are interested in. It's something that we say, and we're interested in how it works. The Shulchan Aruch says that we should rejoice in greeting Shabbos, similar to going out to greet a king or to greet a kala. So you're greeting Shabbos like you're receiving a great ruler, a great king, or you're receiving a chasen and kala. I understand that to be a combination of emotions. When you greet a king, you're feeling a sense of awe. You know, this great, powerful person is in my presence. There's honor, there's fear, there's reverence. And chasen and kala is a feeling of simcha, that you're greeting people who are achieving a great milestone in life, completing themselves. And when you accept Shabbos, there's really a combination of the two feelings. There's a feeling of reverence for Shabbos, covered Shabbos, year of Shabbos, and this feeling of simcha, that I get to experience the beauty of Shabbos, and they come together as one. There's actually an idea brought down in Rishonim called a Mora Shabbos, a mitzvah to fear Shabbos. We should have a certain reverence of Shabbos. So when Shabbos comes in, we're a little bit, you know, we're in Hashem's presence. It's a day which is very, very beautiful and enjoyable, but it's also a serious day because we have to be careful what we do. So we have that, so that's like going out to greet a king. But also we have to enjoy Shabbos, we have to relax, we have to feel good on Shabbos, feel that simcha, and that's like greeting the chasen and kala. So, besides, Lechadodi is a way that we do it. But there's an idea in general of just going to rejoice and greeting Shabbos. The idea of being Makabel Shabbos, bringing it in. That's why I'm Kabbalah Shabbos. You bring Shabbos in with those emotions. There were some places that had the minhag to go out to the courtyard of the shul for Kabbalah Shabbos. They wouldn't say it in the shul, they'd go and say it outside. It's famous that in Tzfas, where Kabbalah Shabbos originated, with the great Mekubalim of Tzfas, they would go out to the fields to greet Shabbos. And there really is a remnant in the Gemara to that. They'd go outside to greet Shabbos and bring Shabbos in. It's like you're going out to greet an old friend and walking them back into the city. So our minhag, typically, is that we say Kabbalah Shabbos in shul. But there's an idea of turning around at the end of the Chadodi. You turn around for Bo'i V'Shalom, you greet the Shabbos queen, or the Shabbos melech, if you want to view it, and then you turn back around again, the Shabbos kala. So the minhag of turning around is a very interesting minhag. There's actually a discussion which way to turn when you turn around. So in our minds, most of us think you turn towards the back of the shul. But really, there's a machlokis. Are you supposed to turn west or turn to the doorway? Meaning, in America, we daven east. So typically, the back of the shul is in the west. The doorway is in the west. But many shuls, such as the shul White Oak, I know the doorway is actually not going to be in the west. It'll be, I guess, more in the... in the north, right? In the north. Because the door's on the side. So in many, many shuls, the door is not in the west. The door is actually going to be somewhere off on the side, north or south. So the question is the appropriate way to turn to the west, or is it to turn to the door? So what's the reason for these things? So if west means west, that's because the sun's setting in the west. So Shabbos is coming in, as it were, from where the sun is setting. So the Arizal would say that you should turn, it's about the west. The west is the main thing. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Agus Moshe, says that you should turn west, even if the door is not there. The west is the main point. Which makes an interesting scenario. Now, we're so used to being in west of Yerushalayim, we daven east. But let's say you're in South Africa, so there they daven north. Let's say you're up in Tveria, you're davening south. Let's say you're in Japan, you're davening west. So really, if the idea is looking west, so if you're in Japan, you're davening towards the west, you wouldn't move it off of the Chadodi, you would just stay looking west. If you're in South Africa, where they're davening north, you would turn not to the back of the shul, you would turn towards your left to go west. So he ends up with funny scenarios that we're not used to. So that's according to one opinion. Another opinion says that no, the idea is to turn towards the doorway of the shul, because you're greeting Shabbos entering in to the shul. The Shabbos queen, the Shabbos king, the Shabbos kala is entering in. So if that was the case, it doesn't matter where you are geographically, you look, where's the doorway of your shul, and turn towards the doorway. So those are two different opinions. So it's relevant to many shuls even in America, because often west is not where the door is. It's certainly relevant if you're not west of Yerushalayim, if you're north, south, or east of Yerushalayim, where you're not davening east and turning west, you have to figure out where to turn. But it's shul has its minhag, just follow the minhag of your shul, you don't have to make this up on your own, you can figure out the minhag of the shul and do as the shul does. But that's really the discussion. It seems to me that the primary shita seems to be the idea of going to the west, not to the door. Even the common minhag seems to be going to the door. In terms of the halacha, it seems like west is actually the main opinion out there. So it's an interesting thing. Rav Nissen Karelitz, modern day posik, he says you should turn towards the door. So there's different opinions out there. But the Arizal and Rav Moshe say to turn towards the west. No matter which direction you're turning, it's appropriate to turn yourself to the right as you turn. I mean, you're going to go in a clockwise position to go around. And that's based on the idea that there's an idea of always turning right for things of Kedusha. It says in the Beis HaMikdash that the Kohanim always turn right. They never make left turns, always right turns in the Beis HaMikdash. So you kind of see them like, you know, chasing their tails in some in some form. But it says, Kol Pino Shatapona, you should turn, any turn you make, turn to the right. And the right's considered the most chashiv, it's the strong side. Right represents chesed. Right's always considered a virtue, halachically. So when you turn for the chadodi, whether you're turning west or east or north or south, you should always do a right turn, you know, a clockwise turn to get there. That's what you should do. To me, that's also another sign, which is that Shabbos is similar to a Beis HaMikdash. Because if you're trying your best to turn in the same way the Kohanim would turn, that means you're also understanding the idea that the air of Shabbos, the atmosphere of Shabbos, is a holy atmosphere. It's an atmosphere like the Beis HaMikdash, which you'd always turn to the right in the Beis HaMikdash. So you mentioned, I think, last week before, how Shabbos is really a day which is a miniature Mikdash in time. So this is another way you see that. When you're turning around for the Chadori, you should always turn in the same way. In the Beis Hamikdash, turn to the right. So the main reason to turn, as we said, is to greet the Shabbos, to bring Shabbos into the shul. However, there is one other explanation of why we turn that I saw brought down in Tamei HaMenhagim. You know, there's an idea that people who are in Avelis, they don't enter the shul until after the Chadori. Or Mizmor Shir. They shouldn't be there for Chavel Shabbos. They enter in after Chadori before Mizmor Shir begins. So some, yeah.
Is there a bowing? You don't bow like this way and then you turn around and you bow, but there's no bowing when you do it?
The Chadori?
Yeah.
Then it gets to bow also. Yeah, it's to bow when you're turning back. Yeah, actually, I didn't write it down, but yeah, there's a minute to bow as well.
Bow.
Yeah, right, there's a minute to bow. That's no matter which way you're turning. There's a minute to bow down. Because again, you're still greeting Shabbos coming in. But the other reason given, according to this, you wouldn't bow. According to the other reason, is to check, is there an avil at the door that you have to be menachem before Shabbos begins? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of funny, the whole tzibur is like swinging around just to check that out. So that seems to be a little bit more of a far-fetched reason in my mind. But the main reason is definitely seems to be that you're greeting Shabbos coming in. And that's why we say boi kala as we bow down and turn back around again to the front of the shul. So that's the chadodi. So from that, I want to move on into some ideas of Kiddush. I guess kind of moving through Shabbos. So let's go through some basic halachas of Kiddush, then we'll talk about different, you know, minhagim practices that we have. So number one, the chiyuv of Kiddush itself is deraisa. It's from the Torah itself. But you have to differentiate. There's verbal Kiddush, and then there's Kiddush on a cup of wine. So the Torah requires us to verbally recognize Shabbos. So you have to make some declaration of Kiddush Shabbos as Shabbos begins. That's deraisa. So for that, some poskim say just the words "Good Shabbos" are enough, because I verbally recognize Shabbos. I'm certainly reciting Vayechulu by itself is enough, because again, you verbally recognize Shabbos. Midoraisa, that's the obligation. This is an obligation upon men and women. They both have the obligation for Kiddush Midoraisa, and we have to greet Shabbos verbally in some way. The Rabbanan requires to do this over a cup of wine, or possibly bread as well. We'll talk about as the other option. So the Rabbanan gave us a standard text, and the Rabbanan said, do it over some sort of object, whether it be wine or bread, to make Kiddush. So we're familiar with Kiddush over wine, because that's our Chiyuv Midrabbanan. But Midraisa, any verbal decoration is sufficient. So that's Kiddush. It's usher to eat before Kiddush. The idea of Kiddush is that we're sort of starting off Shabbos, that the food should come in with the Kiddush of Kiddush, and therefore you don't eat before Kiddush. Even drinking water is a problem prior to Kiddush. Some people don't realize that. You can't even drink water before Kiddush. There's a lot of discussion about women drinking while their husbands are away at shul. I'll tell you, ask your rabbi that question, because there's different opinions about it. But there is much discussion about that. At what point exactly should a woman stop drinking or eating if their husbands are still davening? There is wiggle room there. Go ask your local Orthodox rabbi to figure that one out. There's a concept of Kiddush Makom Suda. The Chazal said you have to make Kiddush and it has to be linked to a meal. So at night, it's very easy. What we do is we make Kiddush at our meal. If you were to make Kiddush and not have a meal, you're not Yotzi Kiddush. You didn't do your mitzvah. It has to be linked with a meal. At night, we really try to make it on a bread meal. During the day, there's also some wiggle room in terms of using mazonos as well. If we do it at a Kiddush and Shul, we'll make Kiddush and eat mazonos. So that's okay during the day. At night, ideally, one should certainly only have Kiddush along with a bread meal, not with anything else. So that's Kiddush Makom Suda. Kiddush Makom Suda also means there should be a Suda with the Kiddush. And also, you should not make any interruption between Kiddush and Hamotzi. So you make Kiddush, then you get up to go wash. You shouldn't really like sit around then talking. You shouldn't go and like start preparing the salad. You should really pretty much make Kiddush and wash immediately prior. And then afterwards you can talk and make salad and things like that. But Kiddush Makom Suda does require us to try to link the two together as much as possible. So that's something we should definitely try to do. There is a minhag amongst, we'll talk more about it later, amongst mostly Yekis will actually wash prior to Kiddush. Not common amongst others, but that's the Yekusha minhag, so we'll get to that one later. But for most of us who wash after Kiddush, you should make Kiddush, and then try to go to wash right away without having too much interruption. You're about to talk then, it's okay to talk, it's okay to do a few things, but it's best to just try to get right to it and not delay. So that's Kiddush Makom Suda. So to get to our the procedure and the practices that we do. So all of us have different minhagim versus standing versus sitting at Kiddush. And there's many minhagim to that, and we'll explain why the minhagim are what they are. The Shulchan Aruch says that you should say Vayechulu standing, and he implies that you should stand the entire Kiddush. That's Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says that you should, he says you could stand at Kiddush, but it's better if you sit down. So he says you're okay if you stand, but he says it's better to sit for Kiddush. And then he says the minhag is to sit for Kiddush, except he says at the beginning of Kiddush you should stand a little bit. Now what does that mean? He says that the first four words of Kiddush, Vayere Vayivoker, so those words, Vayere Vayivoker Yom HaShishi, so those words, Vayere Vayivoker Yom HaShishi, the Rosh Tevos of the name of Hashem, right? Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yom HaShishi is Yud and Hei. Am I getting this right? Vayere Vayivoker. Vayere Vayivoker Yom HaShishi. Oh, sorry, Yom HaShishi Vechul HaShemayim. Those four words. Something didn't work out. Yom HaShishi Vayichul HaShemayim is Yud Kei Vav Kei. So therefore, because that's a remez to Hashem's name, you stand up for those four words, and then just to show kavod to the Shem Hashem, then sit down for the rest. So that's the Ramah says to do. Some people stand for all Vayichulu, and then they sit down for the rest of it, from Brit Gafin and onwards. So that's a minhag as well. So what's the reason for this minhagim? I mean, it's like the bunny hop. You stand, you sit, you kind of stand, you kind of sit. What do? So the reason to stand, the reason that people would stand the entire time, this is really based on the concept that Vayechulu is considered testimony that Hashem created the world. We're standing there and we're giving edus to the creation of the Shemayim Baretz. Testimony in a Beis Din is always said standing. Usually in a Beis Din, Dayanim sit, the judges will sit, and the Edim will stand. So if you're giving testimony to the creation of the world, you should stand because you're giving testimony. And that's Vayechulu. So that's the reason to stand for Vayechulu. The Shulah points out that when you make Sheva Brachos for a Kala, you also say them standing. Not at the wedding, not at the Suda, but at the wedding, when you say Sheva Brachos, say them standing. So therefore, you should stand for Kiddush because it's like the Shabbos Kalas come in, it's like Sheva Brachos. It's like the wedding, so you should stand up for the wedding. So those are reasons to stand. Why would you sit? So the reason to sit, the Mishnah Berurah says, is because if you have Kiddush Shemakum Suda, so what's more considered part of your Suda? If you're sitting at the table, like you would as you eat, that's considered Makum Suda. So the idea of sitting would be an idea of being part of the Suda, where you're more connected to the Suda if you sit. Additionally, in general, whenever you're making a bracha for somebody else, it's best to be sitting. Whether it be Hamotzi, Kiddush, Havdalah, there is an idea to sit together because it kind of means that you're convening as one for the bracha. If you're all standing around, you know, kind of milling around the room, you don't see everyone together as a group. You sit together at the table, that's a group. So the reason to sit would be because you're being motzi someone else in a bracha, and also because you want to be part of the Suda. The Arizal said that al pi kabbal is a reason to stand. I don't know what the reason is, but he says al pi kabbal you should stand. So this is a different minhagim. Everyone has their minhagim. You should follow your minhag. Everybody agrees, though, no matter what your minhag is in terms of standing or sitting, you should sit down to drink the wine. So it's a prayer to sit down as you drink. And the reason for that is because it's considered derech eretz. It's not derech eretz to walk around drinking. It's derech eretz to sit down and drink at the table. So therefore, no matter what you do for Kiddush, it's advisable to sit down to drink your wine. So that's the idea of standing or sitting for Kiddush. So really there's four minhagim. Sit the whole time, stand the whole time, stand the first four words, sit for the rest, or stand for Vayechulu and sit for the rest. Four different ways you can go. Everyone has their minhag, so follow your minhag. So that's the idea of standing or sitting. We make Kiddush over wine. So why did Chazal require wine for Kiddush? So the idea of saying Kiddush over something, really there's two parts to it. One part is that, again, it's makom suda, so you want it to be some food there to be part of your suda. But the primary reason is like any kosher bracha. We make brachos, you know, at a bris, at a wedding, pidgin aben, benching, havdalah. We do things over wine usually. And that's because the wine gives chashivas, it gives significance to the mitzvah that you're doing. If you just like say something, it kind of it's more floaty, it's more informal, let's call it. If you have to have something that you're using as an object to make the bracha, so that gives it sort of a chashivas. You're showing this is a very significant act I'm doing. So that's the idea in general of making brachas over wine. We're so used to it, we don't think about it, but so many different events that we have, we actually make the bracha over wine. It's an interesting thing. Ideally, you should use wine for Kiddush. If you don't have any wine, then you can use bread, the challah. Only at nighttime, not during the day, at night. I'm talking about night right now. At nighttime, you can use challah if you don't have any wine. During the daytime, you can't use challah. And the reason for that is because the daytime Kiddush is really just the bracha. I mean, anything you say beforehand, Vishamru, Vayachulu, those things, that's a minhag to say, but it's just a psukim. The actual bracha of Kiddush is just Bere Pri Gafen. So if I were to take out Chal and make Hamotzi, I didn't do anything additional, because I'm having Hamotzi anyways. So during the daytime, if you don't have any wine, you should use what's called Char Medina, which means the popular beverage of the land. Char Medina would be something you would bring out to serve, let's say, a guest, not because they're thirsty, but to honor them. So if someone comes to your house, you offer them a coffee, a tea, maybe you'll offer them, we definitely consider beer or liquor as Char Medina. It's debatable if we would consider, let's say, an apple juice or like Coke or like milk Char Medina. That's debatable. But Char Medina is the beverage of the land that's considered an honor to your guests. That's what we would call it. Yeah.
Is grape juice on the same level as wine? I mean, a lot of people use grape juice for Kiddush. It doesn't really matter. It's not more chashivas to use.
The minhag is that's the same thing. I mean, there's definitely room to say the wine's better, but the minhag Yisrael seems to be grape juice is totally fine. Either way, people use it without any qualms, no problem about it. So I would say grape juice is fine. So at night, ideally, you should use wine. If you don't have wine, you should or grape juice. If you don't have wine or grape juice, you should use bread. If you don't have bread, you can use Char Medina at night as well. So you can use a beer, you can use whiskey, you can use coffee, you can use tea. That's what I recommend. When you get into milk or orange juice or Coke, then that's not as clear halachically, that'd be valid. But that's already, the night, Char Medina is already like the third choice. You know, wine, grape juice, bread, Char Medina. During the daytime, you could use Char Medina if you don't have any wine available. If you do use, let's say, liquor for Kiddush, the one thing you have to be aware of is that you have to have the same shear as you would for wine. So the shear of wine at Kiddush is revius. Let's call it about 3.3 ounces or something, depending on which shear you take. A shot glass is not that big. So you'd really have to use a large cup of that schnapps for Kiddush, which might be a little bit too much for many of us. So that's the one thing to keep in mind if you're making Kiddush over some sort of liquor. For beer, it's not an issue, but for liquor, it'd be an issue. Definitely wine is ideal. You should use wine if at all possible. What kind of wine is preferred? So Lacha does prefer red wine over white wine if all things are equal. However, if there's white wine that you have that you feel you like more than the red wine, you can use what you like better. So all things equal, go with the red wine. But if you have a preference for a certain white wine, you can use that instead of the red wine. In general, red wine is considered more, let's say, the wine color, considered more genuine wine, halachically, because the psukim talk about red wine. So that's where that comes from. It's also preferred to use non-mavushal wine, if possible. And the reason for that is based on the Rambam. The Rambam says the wine for Kiddush should be the same wine they would use for Nesachim on the Mizbeach. When they would offer wine karbanos, they would not use mavushal wine, they'd use non-mavushal wine. They'd use red wine, not grape juice, and it would be non-mavushal. So therefore, there is a preference to use non-mavushal wine. If you don't have that, it's fine. And certainly have people at your table that are not Jewish or not Shomer Shabbos, you should not use non-mavushal wine. Don't use mavushal wine because you don't want any issues in terms of the kashrus. But if everyone at your table is Shomer Shabbos and you have non-mavushal wine, then that would be the nicest thing to use. Ultimately, paskin that any wine is fine. Mavushal would be fine if that's what you have. White wine is fine if that's what you have. Grape juice is fine if that's what you have. So really any wine is fine, but these are just kind of preferences if possible. This Rambam also is another point. The Rambam says that you should use wine which is similar to the wine used in the Mizbeach. It's the same point in telling us again that Shabbos is like a mini Beis HaMikdash, because you're trying to use wine at your table that would have been acceptable upon the Mizbeach. So you keep having all these different references that Shabbos is a mini Mikdash in time, and we should treat it that way. We should feel ourselves on Shabbos as if we've entered into a Beis HaMikdash. That's how we should feel ourselves on Shabbos. So that's the idea of wine. Another few reasons why wine is used for Shabbos in particular, one idea is an idea of simcha. Yain yisimach levav enosh, the pasuk says. You know, wine gives joy to the heart of a person. So Shabbos is a time of simcha. The Shabbos kala is coming into the chuppah. We want to greet her, and therefore wine is part of that simcha that we have to greet Shabbos. Additionally, very interesting. Some bring down. We mentioned this, I think, last year. One possibility of the chet of Adam. What did Adam Chava eat? What was the etz hadas? So we actually mentioned last year a few possibilities. It may have been figs. It may have been wheat, may have been esrog. So one opinion was that it was grapes, it was wine. Adam Chava had a cup of wine from the Etz Hadas. So Shabbos is a day that we're supposed to be misakin, we're supposed to somehow rectify that sin. Because when Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, the Shechina was removed from the world. On Shabbos, the Shechina enters the world. So therefore, on Shabbos, we try to take the same fruit that they used for their sin and use it for a mitzvah. So instead of using wine to do an Aveira, we take that wine and make Kiddush on it. So that's another reason we use wine on Shabbos versus other types of beverages. So that's the idea of wine. There is a minute to fill up the cup to the top. Some people get a little bit nervous. It's going to spill, not going to spill, but you should fill up to the top. This is really based on the halachas that are brought down about any kosher bracha. We have many, the Gemara lists 10 different qualifications for a kosher bracha. When you have a kosher bracha, whether it be for benching, for kiddush, for avdal, what you should do with it. And one of these qualifications is a kosmali. It should be a filled cup. And the idea of filling the cup to the top, it's a siman of shefa bracha. Hashem has given us so much. You know, we have an abundance of wine. It's a siman for Hashem's brachos. And it's a cover for the mitzvah. If you take a cup which is only half full to do mitzvah upon it, that's not really a cover to the mitzvah. That's really knocking the mitzvah down to a lower level. If your cup is full, that's a very, very chashiv mitzvah that you're doing because we're full cup of wine. So you fill it up. It shows a siman of Hashem's bracha to us. It also shows cover to the mitzvah. There's an idea the wine should be what's called pagum. Pagum means that somebody already drank from it. So if you have a cup of wine and somebody already took a sip, you shouldn't use that for kiddush. If that's all you have, but the evid, you could use it. But there's a trick to fix a pagum wine. The way you fix it is that if you take some, take from the bottle, untouched wine, and pour it into the pagum wine, that's called fixing it. So let's say someone took a sip out of the cup. And then that's what you have for kiddush. If you just take out of the bottle and pour a little more in, that's considered fixed. So that's okay to do. How do you hold the cup? Another interesting question. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Shlah. He says, "Al pi kabbalah, the cup should be held in the palm of the right hand, and fingers should wrap around the cup." So many of us do this and see this like that. That's actually based on an idea al pi kabbalah that the cup should be held in the hand, with fingers wrapped around. I think this is why many people opt to use, you know, instead of using like the goblet-shaped cups, we'll use those small ones that look more like this, because you can hold it like this more easily. It's rare you find a kiddush cup made more like one of these wine glasses. It's usually made like this, because it helps you with the hold, the special hold. There are those who say, and I've never seen this done, but some say pikabola, you should hold it on your fingertips. I don't know how you could, I'd be scared to do it, spilling it, but like really like this. So I think certain mikubolim actually hold it this way. Not a common thing to see. But those are all Kabbalistic ideas. I don't really have a good explanation why that is, but it's Kabbalistic. Additionally, there's a big kapeda. The Kabbalah is very particular that you should not support it with your left hand at all. So it should only be your right hand, not your left hand. And if it, you know, you shouldn't go like that, you shouldn't go like that. Left hand should be away. In general, the left hand is considered, you know, midas hadin. It's considered belonging to the sitra achra, you know, the forces of tumma and evil. And therefore, for kiddush, for the mitzvah, you don't want the left hand involved at all. Now, if you're a lefty, then you should really do it in your left hand. And the reason for that is because for a lefty, his left is considered like his right, halachically. I mean, that the term yamin in Hebrew really means the strong hand. It doesn't mean right. Most people are righties, so we call it right. But really, it means the strong hand. So we say that a lefty should hold kiddush in their left hand, in the same way the righty would hold it in his right hand. But that's the idea. So again, I've never tried that one before, but that's another way you can do it.
Yeah. A person's minhag, most people get their minhags from their father, their parents.
Right.
They learned a different way, and then, you know, they following the tradition, and then they learn this, they should change. And
it depends. If it's a real minhag, you don't change it. If it's just that the parents happen to hold it in a certain way. I mean, some will say, you know, my father always held the cup like this, right? Well, maybe your father just liked holding it like that, but he didn't know what the minhag was. You know, it's hard to know, was he doing that based on a family minhag, or just because he liked to hold the cup that way? If someone holds it like that, probably he's holding the cup because that's how you hold cups, usually. If I wasn't thinking, there's a minhag Yisrael to hold the kiddush cup this way, I assume. But if it's actually a special minhag in the family based on some sort of masorah, you should keep to it. That you don't want to change. So that's the idea of holding the cup. Where should you look during kiddush? Where should your eyes be? So this is actually, the Ramah says that when you begin Kiddush, you should look at the Neros. Some say that actually carries on through the entire Vayechulu. You should be looking at the candles during Vayechulu. So why is that? So this is based on the Gemara. The Gemara says in two places a very interesting thing. The Gemara says, "Psia gasa tells echad mitafklof mimor einav shel adam." The Gemara says, if you take wide footsteps, this will remove from you 1/500th of your mor einav, which loosely translated would be your eyesight. Is that physical or is that a mushul? We'll talk about it in a second. But taking wide footsteps removes from you 1/500th of your eyesight. So Gemara says, Maita kante. So how do you fix it? What do you do to restore that eyesight? It says, Lahadra, you can bring it back, but Kedusha deveshimshi, by Kiddush on Friday night. So on Kiddush on Friday night, you can bring back your eyesight. So Rashi says, what does that mean? Rashi says that when you drink from Kiddush, so that restores this eyesight that was lost because of your wide steps. That's what Rashi says. There's an opinion of Rav Natru Naigon, who says that no, it doesn't mean drinking it, it means taking the wine and rubbing it onto your eyes. Now some do that by Havdalah. That's actually a common minhag at Havdalah, to take the wine and sort of rub it all over the place. But he's saying about Kiddush, that there was a minhag by Kiddush to take some wine and rub it on your eyes, and that will somehow repair that 1/500th of eyesight lost through the wide footsteps. So those are two opinions that have to do not with the candles, but with the wine, either drinking it or rubbing it on your eyes. Yeah?
So why does taking wide footsteps reduce your eyesight?
I'll get to that in a second. Good question. But the minhag actually is not to do either of those. I mean, we do drink the wine, but the minhag is actually to try to, there's that looking at the candles, we assume restores the eyesight. And the idea is that if it's about Me'or Einav Shel Adam, it's about, you know, a person's, you know, the glow of their eyes. So the Shabbos candles have that power to restore that eyesight. So our minhag is that while you're saying Vayechulu during Kiddush, you should look at the candles, and that's somehow going to restore that Me'or Einav Shel Adam. It's actually said that it's not only the one making Kiddush. Really, everyone should look at the candles at that time. Because it's not about the one making Kiddush, it's about seeing the candles during Kiddush time. So therefore, everyone can look at the candles during that time and have this special restoration of eyesight. So what does this mean? I mean, what exactly does the Gemara even mean? Why does taking big steps remove your eyesight? And why would looking at the candles bring it back? So it's interesting because there are some mefarshim that seem to imply this is something really physical happening to you. Which is hard to understand what that means because I'm not sure why wide footsteps affect your eyesight. So the Maral explains it more symbolically, and I'll explain the Maral in a second. But there's actually a story brought down from the Arizal. You know, Reb Chaim Vital, who was the Arizal's, you know, primary student, he came to him once on Erev Shabbos, and he said that I have my eyes are hurting me. He has some sort of headache in front of his head. So the Arizal said, I want you to be mechaven during Kiddush and Havdalah, and you'll be healed. And that's what he did. He was mechaven during Kiddush and Havdalah, and his eye ache was healed. So that implies it was a physical problem. He actually had this ailment of some sort of ache in his eye, which is healed by the light of the Shabbos candles, or at least by Kiddush and Havdalah. But the Maral says something a little bit deeper. He says it more symbolically. The Maral says that what do eyes symbolize? We talk about Me'or Einav Shel Adam. So he says it symbolizes the person's seichel. It's your intellect. Like all the time, we say, you know, if someone tells you an interesting point, you say, I see. You know, I see that. Because we understand that the idea of vision, we talk about someone's vision, that the intellect has to do with eyesight and vision, we connect the two. So the Maral says that Einav Shel Adam represent a person's intellect. We know that the Sanhedrin was called the Einei Ha'eda, the eyes of the congregation. The Sanhedrin's job was to rule as a Beis Din. It was about the intellect. It was about thinking, making rules, coming up with cases, you know, paskening. But that's called the eyes. So our eyes are our intellect. We have the ability to perceive everything within our sphere of existence. The Gemara says, again, I don't know if this is literal, but it says from the Aretz to the Rakia, from Earth all the way up to the Shemayim, it's a 500-year walk. If you were to walk from Earth to Shemayim, take you 500 years. So we mentioned 1/500th of your eyesight is lost based on the large footsteps. So that represents, the Maral says, that we have the ability to perceive everything in our sphere. From Earth until the Rakia, this is all within our limits. And the human being has an incredible, incredible mind. And the human being can perceive everything, you know, again, with lots of work and effort and research and everything else. We can perceive everything within that sphere. That's all within our ability to perceive. So that's 1/500th. But he says, the Maharal says, that how does one really develop seichel? How you develop understanding? You have to have what's called menuchas nefesh, yeshiva das. You have to have tranquility. You have to have a sense, you know, you have to have calm. If you're always busy grabbing at things, doing things, you can't sit down and think, then you're not going to be able to uncover all this great information which the human mind has the ability to uncover. People who have discovered incredible things because they take time to sit down and think about it. If you can't think, you can't uncover things with your mind. So the Maharal says, the idea of a large footstep, that symbolically means somebody's always moving around. You're a busybody. You're always busy. If you're always busy, when do you have time to use your mind and think about the world? So Shabbos, we know, is the opposite of being busy. Shabbos Yom Menucha, it's a day of rest, day of tranquility. Menuchas, you know, Shalom v'Shalva v'Hashkei v'Vetach, it's a day of Shalva, it's a day of Sheket. Shabbos is a day where we have Menuchas HaNefesh, Yeshiva Das, and we can calm ourselves down and use our minds. That's what Shabbos is all about. So the Maharal says, somebody who all week long has been a busybody, and you're always so busy, and you're doing, and you're doing, and you're doing, Shabbos is the time where you can sit down and reflect, and think, and relax, and use that seichel to uncover new things about life and about the world. So if you've lost your 1/500th, you know, you have your 500-day walk, year walk to Shemayim, if you lost some of that understanding, some of that ability because you've been so busy, when you sit down for Shabbos, and you have that Kiddush on Friday night, what usually sets in for us is a feeling of the tranquility, Yeshiva Das, the ability to really just, you know, reflect upon what life's all about, reflect upon our week, and that's the more Inuf Shel Adam. So the Maharal takes this idea of this Gemara and he really makes it much more symbolic, we see. You know, it's much, much more philosophical. But it's such an important lesson for us, I think, about Shabbos. You know, we need time in our lives to sit and think and focus. And the busy pace of our lives doesn't allow for that usually. Now, when do we have time? When do we have time to sit and think and focus about life? Except for Shabbos. Now, Shabbos is an opportunity that we can restore that vision, restore the eyesight. Then we can bring back the ability to really develop ourselves through Shabbos. Now, this is very reminiscent of the Mesillas Yesharim's famous point. Mesillas Yesharim says that one of the greatest tactics of Yetzer Hara is to rob us of free time to think. Most people, if you sat down and thought rationally about life, you'd make different decisions. If you had time to really think before you jumped into something, you might decide differently. If you had time to really focus upon yourself, you would put yourself in a different direction in life sometimes. But the Yetzer Hara says, no, I'm going to make you so busy, you're not going to have any time to think. You're going to be, you know, rushing here and hustling over there and involved in this and doing that and worried about this and worried about that. And at the end of the day, when did you have time to sit down and think and get your life together? You didn't. And therefore, the Yitzhahara wins. Because if you're not thinking, Yitzhahara is going to win over you. Because the way we fight Yitzhahara is because we think through situations and make decisions. But when we're on the spot, and we're being impulsive, and we're rushing everywhere, we lose. Those are the times we lose. The proof for this he brings is from Paro Mitzrayim. And the Jews come to Paro, and they, you know, Moshe says, you know, let my people go. And Paro says, what a ridiculous idea. You guys must have too much free time on your hands, because you're thinking. Mm-hmm. So Paro ups the workload, so no one has any time to think anymore. Because Paro is really the Yetzer Hara incarnate in a certain sense. You know, Paro is somebody who's working with the Yetzer Hara's game plan, is his game book. So therefore, Paro says, I see that you're thinking. You can't think anymore. So now you have to go collect your own straw, upping the brick quotas, because you shouldn't have any free time on your hands. Free time is bad news for you. Because it's the Yetzer Hara. So the Yetzer Hara understands that free time in our hands to allow us to think is bad for him. So therefore he keeps us busy, 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 so we can't think anymore. So Shabbos is the day that Baruch Hashem we have time, hopefully, to sit back and think and focus. And through that we can restore our seichel and restore our approach to life in a way which we feel comfortable to serve Hashem. So that's the more symbolic concept behind this Gemara. So therefore we have the minug that during Kiddush you look at the Shabbos candles. That's where that comes from. So that's the beginning of Kiddush. Now it says further that during Kiddush, once you get past Vayechulu, it's appropriate to gaze at the actual cup of wine. So you gaze at the Kiddush cup. So why should you do that? So the Mishnah Berurah says it helps keep the focus. You don't want to have your eyes wandering around the room. They're saying Kiddush. So if you look at the Kiddush cup, you're focused on what's happening. That's something which helps you stay focused with Kavanah. Now, if you need to say it from a bencher, let's say you don't know Kiddush by heart, you want to say it from a bencher, that's okay. But some say that it's actually worthwhile to learn Kiddush by heart, just so you can do this minhag of staring at the Kiddush cup. So if you don't know Kiddush by heart, it's fine, you can use a bencher, but it could be it's worthwhile to learn Kiddush by heart, just so you can gaze at the wine as you say Kiddush. And their ideas brought down, about, besides the focus in Kavana, about why it's important to stare at the wine during Kiddush. And I'll just read to you one point brought from the Kava Yashar. The Kava Yashar says that staring at the Kiddush cup, at the Koshel Bracha, it's a siman for the Hashkacha of Hashem over the world, because in Hashem Hashem's eyes are upon us the entire year through. So staring at the Kiddush cup is bringing down upon us more of Hashem's Hashkacha, let's call it, because you know your eyes are on the Kiddush cup and Hashem's eyes are upon you. So we actually mentioned a few weeks ago the minute of eating the eyeball from the fish. It's the same kind of idea. Hashem's eyes are upon us. That's the idea of Shabbos. So ultimately, the most important thing is going to be the Kavana. But all things being equal, you should look at the candles, look at your cup, and there's a lot of segulas involved in those types of actions. Next thing is, so we mentioned that there's a minhag amongst yekas mostly to wash before Kiddush. The minhag of most of us to wash after Kiddush. So the idea of washing before Kiddush is actually from the Ramah. The Ramah says that it's best to wash before Kiddush, and he says that even though you're not supposed to interrupt between washing and Hamotzi, Kiddush is not an interruption, because Kiddush is part of the meal. Meaning, if you have to wash and walk to the table to eat, that's all part of getting to the food, so that's not considered a hefsik. So if you have to wash and make Kiddush, you can't eat before Kiddush, that's part of the meal, that's okay, it's not considered a hefsik. And furthermore, maybe it's even better for Kiddush Makom Suda, because now the Suda is immediately following Kiddush. So if your Kiddush has to be by a Suda, if you already washed, you can get right to it. So that's the idea of the Ramah. The Ramah says it's actually ideal to wash before Kiddush. He says, furthermore, being that Kiddush could be set upon bread, so the procedure there is for sure to wash first. Because if you're making Kiddush on bread, what do? You wash, you make hamotzi instead of hagafen and say Kiddush upon the bread. So he says, based on that, why should you change other times? Meaning, if sometimes you'll make Kiddush on bread, and when you do that, washing comes first, so you should always wash first, because why change the procedure? So that's what the Ramah says. The Shulchan Aruch, though, says, no, you should do Kiddush first. Because he says if you wash first and you want to make Kiddush on wine, when you wash first, that indicates that you actually would prefer having bread over your wine. Because why are you washing right now? You're about to have wine. Enjoy your wine. If you're washing first, then your expression is going to be, I prefer bread. If you say that, then maybe you should make Kiddush on the bread and not on the wine, because you're pushing off the wine and saying, I prefer eating bread. So therefore, Mechaber says, the Shulchan Aruch says, don't wash first. Make Kiddush first. Have your wine, enjoy your wine, wash afterwards. And that's okay too. Again, the Kama Minog is certainly to wash after Kiddush, but yet, again, the Yakusha Minog is to wash prior to Kiddush. And I have seen that done. That is still done to this very day. So the next thing is, who drinks? One more thing here. Who drinks the wine? Right? Let's talk about drinking of the Kiddush cup. So the halacha is, the minimal amount to drink from a Kiddush cup is a mlo lugma, a cheekful, one cheekful. That cheekful is based on the individual, really. So if you're a large person, you might have a larger cheek. If you're small, you have a smaller cheek. If you're Og Melcha Bashan, you might have a very large cheek. You know, but that's the Gemara says. But it's based on a cheekful. There is an average cheekful, which is considered Rov Revius. So it's a majority of a Revius. Revius, again, we said, is usually between 3 and 4 ounces, let's say. But really, you can measure by the cheekful. And the cheekful is the minimum shear. If this is ma'akif, you must do this. If no one drinks a cheekful, then you're not yotzi kiddush. So someone's got to drink a cheekful. Now, who's supposed to drink the cheekful? Ideally, the one making kiddush should drink the cheekful. That's ideal. If that person does not drink a cheekful or cannot drink a cheekful, so then somebody at the table who's yotzi with the kiddush should drink a cheekful of the wine. If that can't be done, then there is an opinion that says that everybody together, if they drink little sips, that could all join together to be a cheekful. So if I take a sip, and you take a sip, and you take a sip, and you take a sip, and that would combine as one cheekful, that's enough as well. So that'd be like a bedieved. But ideally, the one making kiddush should drink that cheekful. Drinking from the cup of kiddush, it shows the honor of the koshel bracha. If we made a bracha on a cup, had a little tiny sip and put it aside, so what is that saying about the bracha? What's the thing about the koshel bracha? It's saying, I'm not so interested in it. So having a nice gulp of it, And that's showing the chashivas of the bracha, which is why we do it. So that's the obligation, is that cheekful. Now the Shulchan Aruch does say it's a mitzvah and a mufkar, it's ideal that everyone tastes from Kiddush, which is our minhag, that we pass around, everyone takes a little sip. That's ideal. Just a taste. So someone's going to have that cheekful, but everyone should have a little taste of it. Now, what people make a mistake about, myself included, which we have to, you know, you have to get into a good routine, is that the way that it should be done is that the cup, when you pass around the wine, it should not be from a cup which is pagum. I mean, pagum means someone already took a sip of it. So if I made Kiddush, I take a sip for myself, and then I pass it around to others. Despite the hygiene issues even people don't like, what I'm passing around is pagum, because I already drank from it. So it's best to pour off first, so that the wine poured off is not pagum, and then I pass around what I poured off, and then I still drink out of my cup, my cheekful. That's the best thing to do. The other option would be to pour from the bottle into the cup, because that fixes the pagum problem, as we said before. If you drink from your cup, and then you pour in from the bottle, that fixes the problem. If each person at the table has their own cup, so they can drink right away. I mean, you're supposed to wait for the one with Kiddush to drink before drinking from the Kiddush cup. But if you're holding your own cup and someone made Kiddush, you can drink from your own cup right away, and that's good enough. Again, the minhag still is to pass around the cup of Kiddush itself, but you certainly could drink from your cup at your seat if you've heard Kiddush. That's fine to do. And there's grounds to say that if I make Kiddush, everyone has their own cup of wine in front of them, then really all the cups become a kosher bracha, because they're all in front of me at the table. I'm thinking about all of them. They're all here for the bracha, so they all take on that status. So even the common minhag is just to pass around from the Mekadesh, from his cup. Really, if everyone had their own cup of wine at the table during Kiddush, that would also take on the status of kosher bracha, and that would also be valid. So if you don't drink from the kosher Kiddush, you're still Yotze, that's fine. Very often, Shabbos day, let's say you're at Shul, and the Rav makes Kiddush, like not everyone's getting grape juice, that's totally fine, no problems. But it's certainly considered admirable to drink from the cup of Kiddush, and certainly in your house where it's easy, you should pass it around, that's considered a good thing to do. I think we'll stop there for the week. Yeah.